Joined now by Browns offensive line coach Mike Sullivan. Your third stint as an assistant coach for the Browns, and that makes you unique, really, from others here. I know Rob Chudzinski was here previously as offensive coordinator, but for you to be back here a third time, what's that mean?
It means a lot to me, Vic, and I've known you since I think my first stint here. So you've seen me progress as far as I've spent enough time here to find a wife, to have one of my three children here, and I definitely know my way to the cafeteria. I know the little nooks and crannies of the building, and it's exciting. It's exciting for me because I felt like I've invested a lot in this organization as they have in myself, and it feels good to have a chance to come back. And you always want to finish it right, and I believe that this is meant to happen.
I'm glad you brought that up about investing, because I think the emotional investment that people see with Chud as someone who grew up in Toledo as a Browns fan, that he knows what this team means to the community. I know that's not a prerequisite to be a coach here or a player here, but it has to help. And you, as you say, you have that connection. You know what the Browns are to this community, what they've been for many years. And as you're doing your job, as you're studying and preparing and doing the best you can to help the offensive line, in specifically, but the team in general, get better, you do it with an eye toward what that means to the fan base.
No, it's an organization that obviously everybody here knows how steep it is in history, but it's nothing that I had ever taken for granted. Being born and raised in Chicago, there was a similar organization with the Bears. I mean, they have a lot of history, a lot of great players, and their fans live and die. And when I first came up here in 2001, I thought it was a mirror image of the fan base and how they live and die with the team and how they follow the team and how loyal they are to the team. And as you mentioned about Chud, I mean, I knew back in 1986. I mean, Chud was in Miami, Florida, in a bunch of flannels and Cleveland Brown sweatshirts when it was 95 degrees and humid down there. And I mean, that's it's in his blood, and every day when you come to work, that's it's a different dynamic when you have somebody at the top that's invested like he is.
And let's talk about that connection. You and Chud were teammates at the University of Miami. That's where you became close friends. You were an offensive lineman. You were a center on that team. He was a tight end on that Hurricanes team. Brad Rohl was there, your strength and conditioning coordinator here in Cleveland now. But talk about the connection that you made with Chud back then, and in any possible way, could you have envisioned the two of you working together as coaches? And I know you had that previous stint together in the 07 campaign here with the Browns when you were here. And then now, just could you see that? Could you see a coach in the future in Chud and in yourself?
Chud as a player, I would have to say I didn't envision it, because I would say on our team, Chud was definitely one of the more cerebral players, but I didn't think after he was done playing, I didn't think that would be the path he would go down. I mean, he was working outside of football for a while. And then when he made the jump back in, you can kind of see how he dove in. I mean, and it wasn't one of those casual, let me just see if I like football. I mean, he found it. He knew exactly the time that he had spent away from football. I think he knew when he got back in that this is where he was supposed to be. And not a lot of people know, I mean, he has a graduate degree, he has his MBA degree. We went to school together and finished up our graduate degrees there. But I see a lot of how he approaches the team. There's a lot of graduate work type organization, and there's a lot of scheduling, and he's someone that, like I said, I didn't really envision him at the beginning when he first got out of football, but when he first got back in, I knew he was going to be a head guy someday.
Now let's talk about yourself. A very interesting career as far as a coaching path. Germany, Spain, France. The Peterborn Dolphins in Germany, the Rue Imperials in Spain, and pronounce the France one for me, the La
Courneuve. La Courneuve Flash.
And you were head coach there, head coach for the team in Germany, and head coach in Spain as well. What were those experiences like for you? And you're dealing with players, I'm guessing a lot of course, European players who don't have it ingrained as much, obviously, as a sport is in America. So how was that to deal with as a coach?
just for full disclosure, I'm just going to throw it out there that this stint in my life was nothing more than trying to avoid getting a real job at the time. So
I love your honesty.
It was a way.
I didn't want to say that. I mean, come on.
The club leagues, Vic, and I'm sure you've heard some stories about it. There've been occasional books written about them, but they're teams that it'd be equivalent here to maybe a rugby team that. You get a bunch of diehard guys that might be go out on Tuesday and Thursday after work, and then they'll play a match every Saturday or every other Saturday. And the rest of the time, they're just normal, everyday people. And that schedule at the time fit me perfectly. I had practice from 7 to 9 twice a week, go travel, whatever team that we were going to play, we'd go travel, and I'd kind of slowly work my way back because I didn't have practice until 7, 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. So, and the best thing is in Spain when I did 2 years in a little bit outside of Barcelona is with the daytime siesta, their practice didn't begin until 10:15 at night, and most of the guys were late. So I mean, it was So I had a full day. I had a full day of event before my 10:30 practice had to start. But it was coaching wise. I don't know, the X's and O's weren't as stimulating as what Norv's offense might be, but it was getting back down to the grassroots of it, the organic part of it is just, it was a bunch of guys who loved to play ball and they were hungry for it. And you had to be very creative in how you were teaching these guys because their background, they didn't grow up with the sport. Most of them were guys that just either couldn't play soccer because they were too big or they just weren't good enough athletes.
Any language barrier issues though?
There was always enough guys that would speak English, and then in Spain I made a concerted effort to learn the language, and it was part of my barter. The salary, I didn't have to negotiate maybe as hard as Chud did on salary, but part of it, a lot of it is barter, barter system, and what you end up doing is I ended up my final bullet point on my contract is I wanted to have Spanish lessons from a legitimate Spanish teacher, so nice. I was hardcore. They didn't want to renegotiate with me.
Drove a hard bargain. Mike Sullivan joins us, offensive line coach for the Browns. So we're talking about 97 to 2000, your European tour. In 2001, you're back at Miami as a graduate assistant, your school, Miami, Florida. And then 01 to 04, your first stint with the Browns as assistant offensive line coach, and really your first taste of the NFL. So what kind of experience was that in terms of influencing you? And start talking about some of the coaching influences that you've had in your career.
Well, it's funny. I mean, we talked about Chud a second ago, but, that year in 2001, I just got back from Paris and had agreed to go back and coach a team in Austria. I just really wanted to keep traveling, and my degree was in international business, and I thought it was a way for me to at least get some legitimate bullet points on my resume without having to foot the total bill of it. So my idea was to keep going in this European football league and just coach in as many countries as I could to kind of bolster my employability. But I met Chud for lunch, a little stint in between going back to Austria, and Chud had mentioned at the University of Miami there was an opening. So he said, why don't you come down and see if you like coaching real ball. And I was slightly offended because I thought we were playing real ball over there. But I got his point, and I decided to take a shot. And Butch Davis at the time was a head coach at Miami, and he was gracious enough to let me on. I didn't have any idea at the time that these graduate assistant posts had become as coveted as they had become, because back in the day you could have as many as you wanted, and if you had 10 GAs, it was up to whatever team. After the fact, when I learned that these spots were now limited to two spots, one on offense, one on defense, and they were high volume applications to get the job. So Butch was gracious enough to let me come down there. And the very first staff meeting is when he resigned and took the job up here in Cleveland. So my promotion from college to NFL was as fast as I would have ever expected.
And what were some of the things you picked up from a Butch Davis? And what are some of the because I'm going to guess that he'd be the earliest major influence on you, but a guy, of course, who was focused primarily on the defensive side of the ball. But what are some of the early takeaways you had that have been shaping your coaching thinking now?
I would even go back a step further, because I kind of equate Butch and, these coaching trees, I think it's the term gets thrown around, but Butch Davis would definitely be on a Jimmy Johnson coaching tree if there was one. And Butch was very similar to Jimmy in a lot of ways for me when I watched him. Now, he was on the defensive side of the ball, so I never immediately was coached by him. But the coaching philosophy of being high energy, be upbeat, but number one, be prepared. You know, let these players know that you've invested time in them and that you care about them and that you're on their side. And there's going to be peaks and valleys with each player. I mean, you know, you wish you could have a bunch of guys on your roster that that everything goes just as you would have planned it if you had written your biography after the fact. But it doesn't happen. But Jimmy and Butch and all the guys, you know, even Chud, the guys I've been around, have all been player first loyalty. And it's hard to do. It's easy to say. It's hard to do. But I think at the end of the day, these guys appreciate it.
And again, for yourself, you appreciate that as a former player at the collegiate level. The Cowboys draft you in 1991, the sixth round draft pick, and you end up spending time 92 to 95 as part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So you appear in 48 games with them. So it's enough of a career, certainly, to understand and appreciate things from a player perspective. And I'm guessing, and you're obviously not the first player to go into coaching, but I'm guessing you take some of that thinking with you as to what players expect from a coach because you've been a player.
Sure. And I've told someone the other day, I remember the very first play I lined up as a Dallas Cowboy in an inside run or a 9-on-7 drill where it's offensive line running backs versus defensive line linebackers. And I remember whiffing on the first play and walking back to the huddle, and I see Norv is the first guy that just staring at me, shaking his head like, you know, why did we ever sign you? You know, so I've got the history with the guys on this staff that I can go back and draw from. I know the expectation levels, and I know on the coaching side, having been around some of these outstanding coaches, how hard it is to get guys ready to play and how hard it is to prepare. But then on the player side too, I do know that at some point it's got to be put on the player. Coaches can do so much, coaches can prepare, but the player has to take accountability. And that's probably the word that for myself would come up the most, is the accountability factor of a player has to be at the top of the line, top level.
A very notable thing, when you were coaching at Western Michigan 2005-2006 seasons, in those 2 years, an offensive line helped open holes to a 1,000-yard runner twice and gave up the fewest sacks in the Mid-American Conference in 2006, 14th nationally in that category. You take O-line play isn't a lot about stats, but it's the stats of others, runners who produce yards, quarterbacks who aren't on the ground, that you take pride in.
No, I do. And in the MAC, and in fact, I tried to talk them into putting that in bold in the biography, but they haven't got to that yet, but we'll at least they'll underline it. But it was a sense of pride. And if I showed you the team picture of the offensive line that I had, it might even bring more, because it was a bunch of grunts, you know. In the MAC conference, you get guys who were deemed or were rated or ranked not good enough for the Big Ten, not good enough for the SEC. You get a lot of limited athletes that have a chip on their shoulder, and it was arguably two of the funnest years of coaching that I had, and we did have success. I will again give you full disclosure. On that team was a wide receiver named Greg Jennings, which definitely helps the running game a little bit in the MAC.
Sure.
And a tight end that was named Tony Scheffler, who is arguably a very productive player in the league up until this point. So it wasn't all coaching, but I'll take it as much as they'll give it to me.
After that, you go back to the Browns in 2007-08. So that second stint, how did that differentiate from the first one? I know it's different people, obviously, in the coaching staff, and you were working with Rob, so that I'm sure that was a factor in things. But give me a sense of what it was like the second time around.
The second time around it started out, it was very exciting because the team, we were brought in as an offensive staff in the middle of Romeo's tenure, 4 years. So we came in his third year, and previously the first 2 years they didn't do a great job. And then we were really made a race at the playoffs that 2007 year. And I really thought we had something going. You know, I mean, it was an exciting time. The offense was scoring points, and you again, we go back to the city and the energy and the fans, and to get a taste of them being excited and them seeing the hope that it's not just the Browns playing, but the Browns playing for a playoff spot. Ultimately, we didn't get there, but I felt the energy and the juice that kind of when I got back here is what I'm feeling now, is what I'm hoping. You know, and everybody is. Listen, there's a honeymoon period, and I know every team, the NFL has done such a great job of setting up that it really is a year-to-year proposition in the NFL. Any team really has a shot. Now, some teams have a better shot with their skill player, quarterback, or whatever. But we in 2007 thought we were on an upswing, and it was a great lesson because it's a year-to-year proposition.
From 09 to 2012, you were with the San Diego Chargers. Of course, North Turner, the head coach there. You worked again with Chud there. And obviously just developing your career further. And I think what's unique, you're the O-line coach there. What's unique, too, about this situation is you work with George Warhop, who had been here previously as O-line coach. And I know the two of you have great chemistry and work together. And I imagine that that's even a greater situation when you can rely on someone who has – obviously, the greater familiarity with some of the players who were already here, and then you bring your knowledge set to it, and it meshes.
It's when I first got here, knowing George just on a very casual, saying hello to him at the Senior Bowl, and I knew exactly who George was. I knew how many years he was in the league, and you know, when Chud got the job here, and he told me that George was staying, and you know, obviously, one day. I would like to be talked about in the same I would say accolades or the same adjectives that people use for George Warhop, because he is a guy that is demanding of the players, yet the players know that their interest is first, which I talked about earlier. Those are the values that I kind of principal coaches on, and I didn't know George as well as I do now, but seeing how he is with the players, this is a win-win for me, because there's no way that I can't become better as a coach. You know, I've been in this thing, and I think I know unrealistically, but you always think as a coach that you have the answers. And I sit there and I listen and I watch the things that George does with the players and the different drills he does. And I walk away saying, you know what? I don't have all the answers, because there are a lot of things that I was never exposed to that I'm seeing right now, and it's exciting for me. It's like anybody that you go into work and you have an opportunity to better yourself, and that's the way I approach it every day. Is I'm getting a chance to help other players get better, and I'm getting better myself, and you can't ask for anything more.
Great. Well, we appreciate Mike you taking the time. And going through this really very interesting career of yours, and we do wish you all the best, and we'll do this again.
They like to call me the Vince Lombardi of Europe, if you could spread that around.
Awesome. He is Mike Sullivan, offensive line coach for the Browns, joining us on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, and we've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.